In the beginning, Rusty and I had been talking about this for about 3 years. And the conversation occasionally would come around to the fact, how could we work together? And actually, as the two of us, how could we work together in terms of, you know, playing steel, sitting in with him on projects and so on and so forth. But it really got down to the concept of maybe we could do something even more different, which was put Poco back together for an album. And we actually had called several people, Timmy and Paul. I'm not sure if Paul was contacted, but I know Timmy was, and Timmy wasn't interested. And some more time passed, and finally, one time during a conversation, Rusty asked me, what do you think? And I said, well, I'd be interested provided it was the original members in the group. And at that point, he made some phone calls and I think spoke with Randy and Richie, and both of them expressed an interest in that concept. And it was then that we began to go into phase two, which was, for me, I didn't want to do this unless everybody was really into writing and singing and their chops were up and they really wanted to make a concerted effort. And so we got together in Santa Barbara at my studio and we spent 4 days getting to know each other again. It really wasn't about the music at that point, for me, anyway. It was about, you know, hadn't even seen Randy in 20 years. And Richie had become a minister and had a different walk of life. And George I'd seen playing with Vince Gill and Rusty on the road a couple times. So it was like, who are these guys? And it was kind of like going to a high school reunion. And then I realized, no, it's not a high school reunion. It's a family reunion. I was really disappointed that Buffalo Springfield was breaking up because there was a tremendous amount of talent, a tremendous learning experience in my life. It was the first big group I ever was involved with producing and playing and so on and so forth. So there was a sadness about the fact it was ending, and Richie and I were in Nashville, I think, finishing up some Buffalo Springfield touring, and at that moment we had talked about what can we do, and I had thrown out the idea of doing instead of a folk rock group, a country rock situation. And from there, things started to evolve where Miles, who was a friend of Rusty's, had been a roadie, I think, for the Buffalo Springfield at one point in time, and suggested when I needed a steel player to bring out Rusty, and in mind that maybe with this concept that we had talked about, that Rusty might be perfect for it. And obviously when Rusty did come out, it began to click, the idea on Kind Woman with the steel. And because we had used James Burton on dobro for the album before, and that instrument worked, and it worked very well with what I liked and what Richie liked. And then the advent of the steel and the music was even greater, because the steel guitar is so unbelievable. I mean, what it can do, its potential is phenomenal. And it still is phenomenal. As soon as the MIDI stuff gets all hooked up, and Rusty's totally into that stuff, it gives a different twist to things. So the concept of doing a country-oriented or rockabilly-type band was really exciting for me. I grew up on that music.
The Everly Brothers, I think, invented country rock. I mean, you know, I'd like to be able to lay claim to that ground, but I think the Everly Brothers did it, and I think the Buffalo Springfield, like Jimmy was saying, they were certainly country rock, you know, Child's Claim to Fame and Kind Woman and that. Although it wasn't the focus of the Buffalo Springfield, it was a part of, where it was more of the focus for Poco. We had a lot of different guys that we tried in Poco when we started it off. There was me and Jimmy and Richie, and we brought in other people just to see what Poco was going to be, even before Randy. And one of them was Graham Parsons. And the notion was that Graham and Richie would be the two lead singers, and, you know, they would front the band, kind of. And that didn't work out as a concept. But Graham, and we didn't have a record deal at that point, but Graham walked away from that going, hey, this is something that could be good. And he went to McGuinn, who did have a record contract because of the Birds at CBS, and said, listen, here's what we should be doing. And they pretty much picked up and took what he'd been rehearsing with Poco and took it to McGuinn and said, you know, let's do this. And I think that record beat our record out on the streets because of the fact that he had a record contract, where Jimmy and Richie and I had to go out and earn a record contract.
Poco today has more fans than there have been records sold. And the reason for that is because we never got airplay, but there were people who loved us and came to see us. And now that we're getting the opportunity to be heard, those fans are coming out of the woodwork. They're coming out to actually support it now, which is interesting. Because, I mean, when I said something about doing a Poco album, people's face would light up and I'd go, but, you know, they never bought our records. How would they know about Poco? And it really was because we toured.
When the five of us were on stage at the Troubadour in Hollywood in 1969, I don't think any of us ever dreamed the effect that those five guys would have on American music. And I can say this humbly because it's these two guys that did most of that, you know. But the fact that the Springfield, Poco, Loggins and Messina, and Eagles, you know, that's a big chunk of where American music was.
I have a feeling that there's this place where the music all comes from, and there's these various little taps, and out of this one tap flows people like ourselves and the Eagles. For me, it's a medium in which you can still make warm music, you can write songs and express yourself about life. Country music has a tendency that had a tendency to be about getting drunk and losing your woman and shooting yourself in the head. And I think what I was experiencing when we made that transition was that I love the music, I love where it comes from, but there's another social aspect to this, and it began to happen when I was 19, 20, 21 years of age. And the folk rock thing had a very conscious thing to the lyrics, so it kind of spilled over into that. And then our music became a way of life. It is a way of life with us. And Randy, you know, same way with the Eagles, you know, Take It to the Limit. Their songs about real things going on. And that's, you know, thanks to Woody Guthrie and Tim Hardin and people like that who gave us those roots to play with. We had actually had Richie, myself, and Rusty, and George was there. But we couldn't find that's why Graham Parsons was interviewed, that's why Greg Allman was interviewed, and eventually Randy, which probably Randy should tell this story, came to us and was the final touches that we needed to get somebody to sing above Richie, and George and Randy would share parts at times, and I would do a part here and there, but it was mainly really Randy
and
Richie.
The high parts. Yeah, I just remember you were rehearsing up at Richie's and auditioning. And I believe Timothy B. Schmidt was there, and I played the bass, and they said, get him out of here. No, we played a couple of songs together, and I think pretty much that day we decided that we were going to get together.
Richie and Jimmy were real keen on that, making sure that we had a great vocal group. And it turned out that we ended up with all these guys with high voices, which gave us a real sound, that kind of angelic vocal sound, which is really neat. The trademark.
The reason for that song was, again, to probably reflect what Picking Up the Pieces' whole album was about in that period of time. And it basically gives the old audience a chance to say, oh yeah, it's the same guys. But after cut one, it's about who we are today and being able to make a modern record and express ourselves today. So in that sense, it is.
It is really different than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, Richie wrote most all the material and was the lead singer. And after what's happened in these 20 years, I mean, Randy has become a writer and a singer and has had tremendous success, you know, as a, you know, his voice is the voice. And Jimmy's had amazing success in his own right. And, you know, I've had some success with Crazy Love in that. And all of a sudden it's evened out now where the guys in the band are all equals. And it's not the way it was 20 years ago. And we come to it, I mean, Jimmy and Randy and I and Richie all come to it with a history of successful records and this, that, and the other. And it's a whole different thing now. And it's really fun because we all stand as equals. Even though Randy sold more records and Jimmy sold more records, we don't talk about that.
In the beginning, Poco got together as a group that was writing and singing and performing, and we got a record deal. When the group came back together this time, we got a record deal, and then we individually wrote and brought to the table the songs that we felt the best about, and then we recorded, and now we'll perform after that. So it's a reverse process. And in doing something with guys spread out, The ideal thing is if we could have gotten together as a group and talked about things and where we wanted to go. Rusty and I kind of would do this. We had a lot of conversations over the phone and what we saw and what we thought and how we'd like the album to sound ultimately and that kind of stuff. So we spent that quality time together on the phone. But when it came to the writing aspects, we really individually wrote our songs and submitted them. And it became an eclectic combination of material that really is individual. But when those individual songs were selected by a producer who then found all the different aspects of the songs that could include other aspects of the singers and so on and so forth, is where that miraculous kind of combination started to happen again. If we wouldn't have had that kind of support, it would have been very difficult. He was the person to form the record. He and Alan Kovac, they selected the material, and Alan is very radio conscious in terms of what he feels sounds right and what lyrically works and so on and so forth, and did a very good job in selecting three songs, one of which is our first single. The other of which I have to really commend him on, because when it all began was not a song when we got it. It was a track with some chords that were very redundant in my mind, and I didn't hear it, and Rusty didn't hear it, and we couldn't figure out what he was doing. And then when he gave the track to Richie and said, you know, what I'd like you to do is write a song about what it was like when it all began for you guys way back when, and Richie wrote the lyrics, suddenly it worked, and we knew what it was for.
I think the vocals, that's one thing I was impressed with in the studio, rather than somebody just saying, I have to sing this song. We each would try, you know, there were a couple of songs we weren't sure of. And I tried to sing it, James would try to sing it, mm-hmm. Rusty would try and sing it. Whoever voice sounded the best, that's what was nice, is making a good record, not worried about who should sing the song, you know, just make the good record.
Rough Edges was a song that Rusty had written for me to do. It was too far out of my range, and I didn't think I'd be able to do a good job on it. And as it turned out, when Randy sang it, it was perfect, because he had just that edge, plus his range is much higher than mine, and it made a much better song out of it. Call It Love, I had sang and did a good job on it, but David felt that Rusty's, the sound of his voice would be more apropos for it, because of all the years that Poco had been really making records, it was a hit song in his mind, and he wanted to have a voice that people would remember. And the combination, again, of those elements is what I was talking about earlier, where we needed to turn loose of certain aspects of what we thought was right or wrong and let these guys do their job. And I think it worked.
When we first got the tune, it was first presented to us, some of the lyrics weren't as good as they should have been. And Jimmy went in and wrote some new lyrics for it that really make a big difference in the song. So it was a group effort, that tune. It was a total group effort. There's a couple of interesting things I think about that record. It was the first time I'd ever sung someone else's song, ever, which is a real new experience for me. It's a lot easier singing your own song because you write something that you can sing. Your voice works for it. Needless to say, to sing somebody else's song is a whole different thing, and I really enjoyed that. The chorus is a real rip-off on Smokey Robinson, I thought, and when I was writing at home, I had this, who else? Did? It just kept going through my mind, and at first I wondered if it were a little too smoky to work, you know? But like Jimmy said, we all turned in, I think between the four writers in this band, we turned in 25 or so songs to the committee to be chosen for what's going to make the record. And they picked that one, I think, because it has a certain kind of Poco sound to it. And I really love material where we can use these guys' voices.
We didn't really have a lot of time to do some of the intricate background parts that I personally would have liked to have seen, but on a couple of the records, that of which we all, four of us, sang on that record. So those records I'm particularly fond of because I love hearing our voices sing together. It was a song that I had written originally for a movie that starred David Keith called Independence Day. The song is about a person who was caught in a small town and wasn't able to discern whether they should leave this town and all their history and all that and move to Hollywood, which is very similar to what a lot of us have gone through. And the song had to reflect in the beginning of the movie what this person did and what they were about. And then at the end of the movie, it had to also reflect the fact that they had done it, and that's what it was about, and to find a lyric that would work all through the movie and keep the consistency and not give away the punchline was what my challenge was. And once the song was written and used in the movie, it was gone. And I had pulled it out and going through my unrecorded songs and things like that, and someone said, "Golly, you know, you really, that ought to consider singing that song for your own album." And then at that point, I thought, why don't I submit it to Poco, because I think it would make a better group song. And they loved it and used it.
He wrote the song pretty much with me in mind. I had done some work with Richard on his first album, I think it was, with Joe Walsh. I'd gotten Joe Walsh and I sang on it, along with Timothy B. Richard had actually not finished the song and asked me to try and write to it, and I did, but I was working on the road with another band at the time. By the time I got back into L.A. and didn't really have enough time to really think it out more, and so he went ahead and finished it.
We haven't played together really in 20 years, you know, as this group, but one of the things that Rusty had mentioned is that, you know, we really enjoyed working together as musicians and playing our parts together and bouncing off one another. And I think it is going to be fun to get everybody back. And there are different levels of musicianship that we've all kind of gone through and changed. And, you know, the group has changed, thank God. So I think when it comes time to performing again, it'd be fun seeing how we can get all of our history.